From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week on Intersection, we talk with Caleb Rowden, the newly elected Missouri State Senator for District 19. Rowden will replace two-term District 19 Republican Senator Kurt Schaefer. The race with Stephen Weber for the District 19 state Senate seat was unbelievably hard-fought and hard-contested, and won with just over 51% of the vote, and he had just shy of 49%. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that race was so close?
Well, I think there were a number of factors. I mean, I think that we were both, recruited candidates, good candidates, had built respectable profiles in Jefferson City. Well-known and pretty well-respected in the community, I think. I think the other piece of it that maybe people in mid-Missouri are less aware of is that this was effectively the only contested general election Senate race in the state. Mm-hmm. And so, typically you have three or four usually that are of some significance in a general election. And so, the resources from parties and things like that are split up, three or four ways instead of one way. And so, Republicans obviously had held on to it, won it, and then held on to it. Kurt was the first senator ever to be reelected in Boone County as a Republican, and so we wanted to keep that momentum going. Democrats obviously wanted to take it back, and so I think there were a lot of factors that made it into the race that it was.
And the interesting thing about District 19 is that it's Boone County and Cooper County.
Yeah.
So those are two somewhat different counties. Cooper's much more rural. And Stephen actually won Boone County,
mm-hmm.
and you won Cooper County.
Yep.
And your margin was such that you carried the district.
Right, right.
Do you think it's possible to serve both the voters of Boone and Cooper County effectively
I
and
do.
Give them what they
yeah,
need?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think one of the advantages that I had coming into the race was that my House district was effectively a mirror of the Senate district in that, it was 45% outside of Columbia, about 55% inside the city. And so we had worked over the last 4 years, one, to be very engaged in the rural parts of the district, attend events and make sure folks know that even though I live in Columbia, that I want to be a voice for them as well. So, I think just being there is half the battle. And so we did a lot of that. And so I think there was a bit of an advantage there that I had in understanding how to campaign and how to, help folks from Cooper County understand that, even though I don't live here, I know who you are. I know what you're going through. I've talked to you. And obviously being in Columbia, we're very engaged here in the community. And so I think that was a little bit of an advantage that I had. But, I think, there are pretty significant differences in some cases between Boone and Cooper, but in a lot of cases, that their desires as it relates to want to make sure that our education system is world class and our communities are safe and the economy is growing. Those are things that are universal, certainly within Mid Missouri. So that's what we focused on in the campaign and what we want to continue to focus on in the Senate.
And you mentioned that your House seat is sort of a miniature version of this Senate district. What is it going to be like for you to go from the House to the Senate? Does that mean that you get a bigger office with a better view?
I do get a bigger office. I do not get paid any more money, contrary to what I think most people actually thought. So Missouri is a little bit unique in that in relationship to our population, we have one of the biggest houses in the country,
mm-hmm.
but have one of the smallest Senates.
Mm.
And so the concentration of power and influence, I think, is obviously a little bit more significant in the Senate. You have the filibuster in the Senate, so you have the chance as one singular individual to, impact things if you choose to do so. So, there's a lot of changes. I think what it means for what I do here is not all that much different. I'm representing six times as many people as I was before, but I think the equation for success is about the same. You talk to people, you engage. We won our election, and I was in Hallsville and Centralia the next 2 days at events. And so this is not about the purpose of this is not just solely to win an election. You win an election so that you have the opportunity to engage and make a difference, and influence change for Mid-Missouri. And so winning the election was one step, but now the hard work of governance and making sure that the General Assembly understands the needs and the movement that Mid-Missouri has, and that's going to be a job that I'm excited to tackle.
How many people are in the House and how many people are in the Senate?
There's 163 reps and 34 senators.
And in terms of the District 19 seat, I mean, it was also an extraordinarily expensive race. A lot of money was raised. I've seen it referred to as the most expensive race in the state.
It was.
Why were both parties so keen to get this seat?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it being one of the only places that money could have gone, you know, there was another somewhat competitive race in South St. Louis County. But we knew that this was going to be nothing really in this race surprised me, and I probably not Stephen either. You know, I think we both knew that it was going to be, you know, a pretty high profile showdown. And Republicans, I think we needed to make a case, and this isn't a case that. That was Republican or Democrat specific, but I talked to a lot of folks and said, "Hey, look, you know, our senator for the last 6 years has been the head of a Senate Appropriations, which is an incredibly powerful position, and did a lot of things to fight back some budget issues with the university in 2009 and 2010, and so to go from that position to a senator in an 8-person minority, which would have been a real problem, frankly, and that." That wasn't something that I just said in the campaign. That's just a reality of the nature of where we are, in the Missouri General Assembly, and obviously Columbia specifically, but Mid-Missouri, benefits a great deal from Jefferson City investing in our community and understanding the needs of university and of healthcare and some of those things. So it was important for a lot of reasons, and I think Republicans and Democrats both saw that.
And I wanted to talk with you a bit about policy. I know when we've spoken in the past, you've said that you'd be open to conversations about Medicaid expansion. But mm-hmm. Do you think with the sort of Republican-controlled legislature from top to bottom, that's even going to be an issue that comes up in the next few years?
Well, I think I think part of the pushback was from some Republicans. I think there were different pockets of people who had different reasons why they were opposed to it. One of them was the uncertainty of who was going to occupy the White House mm-hmm. and what that would mean for the federal law. I think the federal law is going to change pretty substantially. And so, you know, it would be my hope that the federal government and a Trump administration would give states more power to make more decisions. You know, I think part of the problem that we find ourselves in, and this is going to be a bad budget year because we have so many mandatory cost increases in Medicaid. And that's not a product of not expanding. That's just a product of the program being what it is. And so, you know, if we at the state level had more opportunity and authority to figure out how we use that money in the most effective way possible for our state, as opposed to having to operate under the same governance structure as, you know, the state of New York or the state of California, I think there could really be some substantial change for the positive that happens there. You know, I think a misconception about the Medicaid discussion and the health care discussion as a whole, you know, Republicans don't want people who need to have access to care not to have it. But there are other pieces of this discussion that you have to keep in mind, and the fiscal, you know, reality at the state level is one that, you know, it has to be a part of this discussion. So, I think it was a long answer to say that we're going to see what happens at the federal level. And I think that's going to be a bit of a wait and see. And then from there, you know, hopefully if we're given a little bit more freedom and authority to make our own decisions, I think that gives us some really good opportunities to make sure that working poor and folks who need this coverage can have access to it.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM, and we're talking with Caleb Rowden, the newly elected Missouri State Senator for District 19. And I was looking at your website.
Yes.
And I was looking at your sort of key priorities mm-hmm. here, and I just wanted to talk a little bit with you about what they mean. We have taxes, that higher taxes do not stimulate the economy, and that they stifle innovation, discourage investment, prevent saving, destroy production, and crush the middle class and the poor. And I think everybody would love to pay less taxes.
Sure.
But in Missouri, we have some serious funding problems, like with roadways and bridges. How is it possible to cut taxes or to maintain the taxes that we have without raising them and deal with our infrastructure problems?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, you know, budgets are about priorities. I think defaulting to a premise that says that we can't do what we're supposed to do, given the dollars that the people of Missouri have entrusted us with, is lazy. And frankly, I think it's just a cop-out. So I think that's one thing. You know, we in Missouri have what's called the Hancock Amendment, which is a budgetary thing that says basically if we at the General Assembly, if the state raises revenues by more than X percent of the overall budget, then that has to go to a vote of the people. Mm-hmm. And so what's unique and I think what's important about that is that if we are going to raise taxes in a way to fund roads and bridges or those sorts of things, that the people have to have a say in that. And so it's a bit of a double-edged sword because, you know, the road and bridge problem is a significant problem that we're going to have to find a solution to. But we in the General Assembly don't have the power, other than to cut a lot of things from other places, we don't have the power to, on our own, fix the problem. That's going to be something, whether it be a sales tax increase, a gas tax increase, a toll road implementation, all of those things raise revenues by such a substantial margin that has to go to a vote of the people. And the people have said time and time again over the last decade that they don't want to pay more taxes. You know, they voted down the 2014 sales tax. They voted down two cigarette taxes for early childhood education here recently, or one for early childhood, one for transportation. And so that puts us in a position in the General Assembly to say we've got to operate within the confines of the variables that the people of Missouri has given us. And so that's challenging at times, but that's where we are. And we are a low tax state, and we are a state that has a balanced budget. And I think both of those things are good things. So we have to continue to do the really, really hard work in Jefferson City to say, here's our budget, and we are going to fund the things that are of priority to us. And the biggest challenge to that at this moment is the skyrocketing cost of Medicaid. We've seen it last year, almost $400 million of general revenue increase. This year, we are at a place in the budget process just to pay our bills as it relates to the cost increases in social services that the state economy is going to have to grow by 6%. There are problems there that we're going to have to solve, and I certainly would like to be in a position to say that when the economy grows by X percent, that we have access to those dollars to say these are the things that we want to prioritize, whether it be K through 12 funding, higher education funding, infrastructure funding. But for the moment, we're stuck in a pattern where all of the cost of all of the growth is going to continue to pay the mandatory cost of Medicaid, and so that's a problem we're going to have to work to fix, and hopefully the federal government helps us out in that.
Wouldn't have expanding Medicaid helped address that problem because then federal funds would have been available to Missouri?
No, so it would have. So you have a current population of about 1 million folks. You have what would have been an expansion population of about 300,000 folks. The current population is a 60-40 split. The federal government pays 60, we pay 40. Once fully drawn out, the expanded population would have been 90-10. Okay, so
but that would have been several years down the road, right?
Well, yeah, now it would have been now. Mm. So we're past the point of having 100% paid for by the federal government. So basically, what we're saying, I don't believe that you can treat those things, those pockets of people, in the same way. And what I mean by that is, if you expand Medicaid, and there are some other good arguments to expand Medicaid, I just don't think that's one of them. If you expand Medicaid, you've got the 90-10 population, but you still have the current population where the cost increase is so substantial that literally we don't have the ability to make any funding priority decisions because all that money's going there. Just expanding the program doesn't do anything to curtail the cost. I think there is an investment from the federal government. There are dollars coming in the door, I think those dollars come with so many strings attached more times than not that our ability to use those dollars to fund other things is not a realistic argument. And so, like I said, there are some reasonably compelling reasons to take a look at expanding Medicaid under the former system. But to say that expanding Medicaid would help us control the cost of the existing population is just not—it's not reality. I wish it was, because that would be kind of an easy answer to the problem, but it's just not a reality. So, it continues to put us in a tough spot, but, hopefully we can figure out a way to curtail those costs, and when the economy grows, we get to use that revenue for, investments in education and other things like that.
So it sounds like what I'm hearing from you is that healthcare doesn't sort of exist in its own bubble. In fact, Medicaid is affecting the budget across
everything.
So many different.
Yeah, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the hard part of governing is that we would like to most folks that lobby and advocate for things, they don't have to take into account, the impact of A on B and the impact of B on C and D and E. And so we as legislators who have to pass a balanced budget constitutionally, we have to take those things into account. And, I certainly, again, you can't, there is an emotionally compelling I think to some degree a morally compelling narrative to be had around how do we make sure that folks who need our help get it? And that's a conversation that I'm willing to, as a person of faith and as somebody who's done that, tried to do that in the private world, I want to engage in those conversations because I think they're important conversations to have. But they are not separate from the fiscal reality of governance. And I think that's something that I think the folks on the other side of the issue have to be mindful of, and that's a reality that I wish I've said it a few times. The law is not an emotional thing. You can make very compelling arguments to tug on the heartstrings, but at the end of the day, dollars are what they are. Balanced budgets are what they are, and we as legislators have to be. It is hard work to prioritize things in Jefferson City because there are a lot of phenomenal programs out there that vie for our attention and, people who need help, that we hear their stories every day in Jefferson City. And so that's all a part of the narrative and all a part of our dialogue, which it's tough.
And you have talked about lobbyists
mm-hmm.
and reforming how that system works in Jefferson City for a while
mm-hmm.
now. And one of your key points is government accountability. And you say, unfortunately, corruption and scandals have shaken people's faith in those who represent them, and it's time to reverse this trend. Can you tell me how, in a position as state senator, you'll keep working on corruption and reform?
Well, I think, there are things that we can do and laws that we can pass that help in some ways. Some of the stuff that we've seen in the last couple of years were, frankly, just moral failures and poor decisions by individual legislators that laws aren't going to fix.
Right.
But I do think, we've worked on, we passed the revolving door bill last year that I think was a very, very small but important start to the process. It's the first piece of ethics reform that's been passed in Jefferson City in a long time. It didn't go nearly as far enough as I wanted it to, but we were faced at the end with the challenge of the choice of do we pass this or do we pass nothing,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like this was usually, if I'm faced with that decision, I'm going to pass something because I think more times than not, that's the right decision to make. We're going to file a lobbyist gift ban bill again this year. I've done it a couple of times, and hopefully the Senate was kind of the problem last year. And so hopefully being over there, maybe we'll have a little more opportunity to engage in a dialogue with some of those specific senators and let them know that, hey, If we've got our pay for our own meal and we go out at night, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I think there's a few other things that we can do. I think I'm going to file legislation this year that right now legislators' email interaction isn't subject to sunshine law.
Mm.
I think that's something that if we're going to require that of other public entities, I think it's probably something that we should do our own. I'm not naive enough to think that I don't know that that will pass in its first year, but I certainly want to start that conversation. So I think there's some things we can do there. And again, you know, I tell this to everybody that I talk to about this. The vast majority of people that are down there are there for the right reasons. They're good people that are down there and serving because they love their community, they love their state, and they are really excited about the opportunity to have the chance to make an impact in this way. But, you know, I think the nature of politics these days is that people don't trust politicians, and that's not always justified maybe, but I think that that is the reality of the situation that we're in. And so I think anything that we can do to be proactive and say, hey, look, you know, especially in a place like Jefferson City where it's a citizen legislature, we all have jobs, you know, most of us have jobs outside of this is not our career. You're not talking about career politicians when you talk about state representatives in Jefferson City. So I think anything that we can do to bring government back to the people a little bit, I think is a good thing. And so I think I'm always cautiously optimistic on this stuff, but I think every year that passes, I think more and more people are made aware of, hey, maybe we should, you know, let's do away with lobbyist gifts and not have to worry about it anymore. We can move on to something else. So hopefully we'll see that this year.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM. And we're talking with Caleb Rowden, who was elected this November to replace two-term Republican Senator Kurt Schaefer as the state senator for District 19. Senator Schaefer had a contentious relationship with Planned Parenthood, to say the least. You yourself on your website say that you're pro-life and you believe every life is precious. You believe no public funds should be used for abortion. Mm-hmm. How would your relationship or not relationship with Planned Parenthood and be different from Senator Schaefer's?
Well, I mean, I don't expect to have much of a relationship with Planned Parenthood. And I don't mean that in a, you know, a negative way.
Right.
You know, I don't believe that it will be figuring out ways to poke at them or, you know, demean or go after them. That's not my priority. I have 15 other things I'd rather do than that. And so, you know, I don't think that it will look the way that, you know, Senator Schaefer did. But, you know, I don't shy away from the fact that I'm pro-life and I don't have any problem saying that to anyone. You know, that's a product of who I am and how I was raised. But I do, you know, I think that there is plenty. I think Missouri has proven through, you know, some things voted on at the ballot and the people that Missourians have elected to send to the General Assembly, I think we are a pro-life state. And so I think, you know, most of them, we've passed a pretty significant amount of pro-life legislation over the last few years. I'm going to continue to focus on jobs and the economy and education and those sorts of things. And you know, hopefully we can do some things meaningful in that area that can bring people together, you know, as opposed to just always trying to divide.
We have a listener who sent us a question on Facebook because we asked people to send any questions they might have for you. And she said, you campaigned about sticking up for Mizzou. Do you plan to follow through on that promise and represent the thousands of students, families, and staff and faculty who are relying on you to ensure their safety by vocally rejecting Representative Taylor's proposed conceal carry on campus legislation?
Well, I certainly am going to stick up for Mizzou. I've done that as diligently and as successfully as I could for the last 4 years. You know, I don't know what he's going to file, so I probably can't speak specifically to the legislation. I think again that probably not something that's incredibly high on my priority list. I do think, you know, in that. Discussion. There is kind of an emotional argument, and then there's constitutional argument. And the constitutional argument would say that we don't put geographical restrictions around the First Amendment, right? And so it's I think it's dangerous to some degree to for states to place geographical restrictions on constitutional rights. I think that's something that you, if you're going to do, you better be very careful when you do it. I don't know what he's going to, file. We'll have to wait and see what that is, but I would do my very best, to make sure that if something is filed, and if it gets traction, that we do everything we can do to, you know, talk to our folks and at the university level and the other colleges around, in mid-Missouri and make sure they have as much say in, implementation or, ways that we can, find middle ground on certain things. I would do everything I could to be, a mediator in some of those discussions.
And so I guess my last question for you is, what are you most looking forward to when you think about the next year?
I'm just really the idea that I would go from being somebody who never thought that I'd be in this position to being the state senator for the community that I love is really a neat thing. And so, for me, it's just about hopefully affirming the confidence that 40,000 plus people in mid-Missouri had in me and hopefully, gaining the confidence of some of the folks who didn't vote for me. I think this district is awesome because it doesn't tilt too far one way or the other. And so what that means for me is, I'm a principled person and I'm going to stick to my guns and my principles on a lot of things that I believe in. But the way in which I go about doing that has to be balanced. I think defaulting to this sort of, well, it's just easier for me to divide, and spew out this rhetoric that's harmful to groups of people or, is detrimental to the process. I can't do that. I couldn't do that if I ever wanted to get elected here the first time. And so, I think for me, that's kind of who I am anyway. It's kind of my personality is try to, I don't particularly care for confrontation. I don't like necessarily being the guy that instigates conflict. And so, and the adverse of that is if I can have a role in bringing people together, and finding common ground on solutions that are important to our community, if that's the legacy I can leave in 4 years or 8 years in the state Senate, that'd be great, and hopefully there's some other tangible, things that come out of my time there. But, I want to be, I want people to respect me. I want people to believe that I'm doing what I'm doing for the right reasons, even if they don't agree with me on everything. And so that means that you got to work with people. You got to talk to people. And I'm really excited about just continuing to, build that network of, trust and influence and people who like-mindedly want to figure out ways to make this community better. If I can just be a part of that, that's all I need.
That was Caleb Rowden, who was elected in November to the District 19 Missouri State Senate seat. Thank you for joining us here on Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And of course, thank you to our guest, Caleb Rowden. Our producer is Mary McIntyre, and our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.